Welcome to Live the Fuel.
Welcome to Live
Welcome
the Fuel.
To Live the Fuel. Focusing on health, business, and lifestyle. And now your host, Scott Mulvaney.
All right, good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another Live the Fuel show here in 2017. So today I'm bringing back our second repeat co-host of all time. We've actually been getting so much rhythm and so much fun going with the Mind of the Athlete team. So if you've listened to prior episodes, Mind of the Athlete is a local company here in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania that actually focuses on a whole lot of PhD love here. We got a bunch of psychologists. We just had Aaron Sparrow on, who's one of the nutritionists the other day. But our repeat co-host today, I actually met at a couple of speaking events. She was speaking and educating people in the CrossFit world on body image. And they're working on a new project called Balance. But today, we're going to be discussing goals here in 2017. So I'm excited to bring back on the show Megan Cannon.
Hello, Scott. Thank you very much for having me again. This
was
a lot of fun.
Do you prefer Dr. Megan, or is it just Megan? I mean, really?
I feel like I have to do Dr. Megan, but it's still admittedly a little bit weird.
I don't want to take anything away from the respect thing, but like being that we're back here hanging at the Starbucks that you originally overheard me doing another podcast.
I was eavesdropping in your podcast. It was that good. So
shout out to Brian Strausser of the Strausser Project. So
because
we were recording your episode, bro, when she was sitting there, literally right next to us, eavesdropping. So
yes, pretending to have my earbuds in, listening to the podcast.
So advantage of doing it in public. Other people get to benefit along with it.
Exactly.
So, and then one of the key things from that conversation, which was funny, was we were talking about a lot of goals that he was working on and also his mindset. And I think that's what probably triggered you to overhear was you're big on the mindset, ergo Mind of the Athlete. So if there's any new listeners here hearing this episode, if you've not heard the prior episodes, we've had Megan on before. We've had Dr. Jared on before. We've had Dr. Julie on before. And we just had on, obviously, Aaron, your nutritionist. So real quick, why Mind of the Athlete for our listeners? Why did you join the team? Again, obviously it's going to be big for 17. You got new projects happening, but what's so exciting about it? Why is it all about that team?
Sports psychology is really a very underutilized thing secularly. It's existed in the research for a long time. In the world of psychology, it's been there, but it's finally starting to get the push and recognition that it has existed and people are starting to utilize it more. Our mental and emotional health just across the board in our country is something that we don't really emphasize. It's, if you want to call it, a cultural epidemic, just with the increase in prevalence, the increase just across the board in a number of different things. We're talking depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, eating disorders. You know, culturally, we're hurting.
Yes.
And so that doesn't exclude athletes. And so it's, you know, our mission is ultimately getting that awareness out there, being accessible resource for people. And ultimately, our main message is the clearer you're able to make your mind, the better you're going to perform. And that could be, you know, for us everyday athletes in our workouts, or for those really elite athletes during their training, or even at school or at your job, or just interpersonally when you're with your friends. If you are able to clear out your mind, you don't have the stressors going on, you've worked through those things, you're then able to be more engaged in your life.
You know, it's funny because we joke around, well, not everybody jokes around about it, but here in the USA, you know, we like to be this super strong, powerful country. And I think there's a lot of us out there that are high performers, but we tax each other out. We push each other, not just fitness-wise. You know, for example, CrossFit world, we're very competitive, or athletically in the collegiate world. Obviously, you work a lot with the colleges and the sports teams. And like today, you'll be going over to Emmaus High School and working with the swim team there. So I think this is beyond just the athlete and the competitive person. I think sometimes just us as a nation, we try and drive and strive to be the best. And I'm not taking anything away from the international scene. I'm sure there's plenty of countries and plenty of people, because we've had some downloads in some other countries on the show. So to show respect to them, I'm sure they have their own stressors. And there's a lot of people out there multitasking, maybe too much too. But I don't know. It seems like we kind of actually set up our own failure. I don't know. What do you think?
No, we do. I think it's that American that can fit the most in 24 hours, that we give them the golden star. And that's then what we raise the bar to, and we strive and achieve to be that. Where then, you know, all of a sudden we're having kids 6, 7 years old playing sports all year round. We're having people not utilize all their paid time off and their vacation days. We're having people afraid to take vacation days because they're afraid that someone else is going to overwork them and take their position. And ultimately, that's just not healthy, you know, for anybody.
No. And so it's funny because, like, as you know, I spent the past 11 years working with USSA ski race coaching up at Camelback Ski Resort here in the Poconos. And I took the season off. It's the first time I've ever done that. But, I mean, I've actually already been up there once helping during the Christmas camp week. And then I'm going up again this weekend because this is a double snowboard race. So it's a race that I've always helped run. And so now I'm playing, like, volunteer, and I show up when I want to, which is kind of nice.
That's very nice.
But the one thing that I have to say over all the years, it really opened up my eyes, was every year I can actually watch and see the kids get pushed harder and harder. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily by us, their coaches. It's actually the parents. And I'm like, usually every start of the season, we say, okay, guys, how was your spring? How was your summer? And there's usually two types of answers. One, you don't have any summer sports, or maybe you went to camp or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or for most of the kids, it's increasing. It's like, oh, well, I was doing this sport, that sport, and the other sport. And some of these kids are coming in with leftover injuries and things of that nature. So that level of competitiveness, I don't know if it's good or bad. I don't know. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's that. And then, you know, I have a good friend of mine who is an orthopedic surgeon, and she is, you know, the overtraining and overuse injuries, more severe injuries are happening at younger and younger ages. So we're seeing, you know, 15, 16, 17-year-old girls blowing their ACL for the second, third, fourth
time.
How
crazy is that? It's ACLs are supposed to be an adult injury, or not even any injury.
You know what? It is so wild because not only are we going 12 months a year, it's if you're not playing for your school, you're then into club. And if you're into club, you're at camp. Yeah. Well, you're specializing in a sport, but typically also specializing in a position. And so for soccer, to like ride that out, if you're a forward, you're a forward on the right side.
Yeah.
And you're a right, like, and that's it. And so you are just using the same muscles over and over and over again in the same fashion. And so people aren't cross-training. People aren't diversifying what they're doing. And so your body is just growing out of whack.
Yeah.
And then you just, one injury goes. And, I mean, there are people needing knee replacements, you know, in their 20s, which we can't, you know. So it's really a detriment, you know, mentally, physically, and emotionally.
Well, and it's interesting because You look at gymnasts, mm-hmm. dancers, and the reason why I bring up those two is because recently, two, three episodes ago, we had on Dr. Sylvia Tara, who's a PhD biochemist researcher who just came out with a new book, The Secret Life of Fat, where she teaches us about how the fat cells are actually an organ of the body and how they're so heavily influenced by hormonal fluctuations and things of nature. And the things about hormonal fluctuations is, especially in youth, if you take your training to a peak level, even as a youth athlete, you're basically training as much as an adult from a young age. It literally changes your body's chemical and hormonal makeup. Like, we look at, and she, in the book, talks about how sexually undeveloped some kids may end up. Like, a lot of female gymnasts, for example, do not develop in certain areas that the other girls are developing in. They may have amazing lean muscle mass, but then you also see not just females but male young youth athletes, especially in the gymnast world, may not get as tall as some of the other kids because they started training so hard and so competitively for strength training and things of that nature. Literally, their bodies develop differently. And again, I don't know if you guys ever get into some of that because you're on the PhD psychology side of things, but that's something that I've always wondered too, because I'm like, yeah, if you think about it, most gymnasts I've ever met are not 6 foot plus tall athletes.
No, I mean, just look at Simone Biles. I mean, she's like, I don't even think she's 5 foot.
I know, right? So clearly, you know, due to that extensive training at a young age, it does literally change your body.
Mm-hmm.
And then we look at what is that doing to you mentally?
Yep.
And how many, it's kind of like how when you look at these, the childhood TV stars, right?
Right.
Like, they don't have the same goals and aspirations that as a traditional child growing up in a family. Like me, I grew up working on a farm, but I still loved going outside and playing with my Tonka trucks and building a racetrack for my radio control cars and jumping over dirt hills. Like, whereas kids my age, if you're in a movie star or, you know, getting into movies, like, you're on a set and your parents hopefully might have hired a tutor at least to keep you educated while you're becoming some childhood star. And they mentally do not develop the same. And we see how many of these kids are really kind of screwed up later in life.
Well, I mean, and especially, you know, you're thinking of those younger ages. Our identity is being shaped and formed and who we are. And if it's only leaning on one pillar, and that's it, whether it's a certain sport or whether it's dance or art or movies, or if that's it, well, someday if that thing isn't there anymore, whether it's through injury, whether you decide to not do it, whether you're, you know, the 98% that doesn't make it in that, you know, high tier level.
Right.
Well, then what? And so that's the problem. I mean, some of my athletes that I come in and I work with individually, I mean, they're starting to see performance detriments that are occurring to them because
it's accumulation.
It's only one
accumulated
thing.
Exhaustion.
And you have that pressure and you have that one part of your identity so far up on a pedestal that they have no other outlets.
Well, I understand that some of these parents are either doing it to keep the kids busy, or some of them are actually doing it to help the child find that magic sport they may fall in love with. Although I've also learned from some of our ski athletes, they just like working in multiple sports because they haven't really leaned towards one domain or the other. And I understand there's seasonal sports. There's certain sports that happen in the spring, the summer, and obviously skiing is the winter. But the one thing I can still remember a few years ago was the one girl, and I don't remember her name actually off the top of my head anyway, but she was trained so hard, and she was one of our best skiers. This is years ago now. But she was pushed so hard by her father that she lost the love of the sport and actually left the race team and never came back.
Wow.
And she was an amazing skier. But because she was pushed in some other sports as well, and she was pushed so hard to train, like when she left the coaching world, like she ended up being like re-coached by the father. And it's like, there's a reason why there's coaches, and there's a reason why there's parents. Stop being both.
Yep.
Like, let the coaches be the coaches. You're the parent. And I'm sure you see this in all sports.
Oh, we see it. We have Mind of the Parent curriculum. And I mean, it's one of those things where we show up with, you know, our points that we would like to get across. But I would say we maybe get through two and it's just question answer. I mean, the parents have so many questions and it's, you know, the ultimate thing is you're the parent. You don't need to be the coach. You ultimately need to be that support system for your child for when they have a bad game, for when they have a bad practice, for when their coach maybe lays on them a little bit. You have to be this other person in a different role. The number one most negative memory across the board with the majority of the athletes we work with.
Tough parenting.
The car ride home.
Oh.
The car ride home is the most negative sports memory that the majority of our athletes report
really?
Having. Yep, because they have a bad game, so they're already in a bad mood or they're embarrassed and they just, you know, they don't want to talk about it. And all of a sudden you have, you know, that parent just laying into you and, well, you should have done this, you should have done that. And it adds insult to injury.
What cracks me up even more is when that same parent never did the sport. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That pisses me off so much. I'm like, really, dude? You were never a ski racer.
Yep.
You've never been a ski race coach. Shut up. Like, I'm sorry. Go be the parent.
Yep.
Like you just said, you're supposed to be the support system. Well, you think you're helping your child, but guess what? The kid, as a youth athlete, is already becoming competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Psychologically, they're already beating themselves up.
Yep.
So when the day is, like, for example, we start early. We start sometimes 7:30 in the morning on the mountain. And then the kids are usually done by 2:30 in the afternoon. And they get a little bit of a break during lunch. During lunch, if it's bad weather, we'll turn on a ski race video and they see the pros. Like, oh, we have a TV in our race room and they can actually watch the pros hitting the course just for fun. But we're not actually sitting there coaching them. Like, that's their mental downtime to get, you know, build relationships with the other kids and stuff like that. But it's like, okay, at 2:30, you're done. Like, that should be a decompression time. But then it's funny because the one guy who's the head of the program, head of the parents, the president of the club, because we're a 501c nonprofit, like, I overheard him the other day, and I'm not going to mention names, but I'm like, I don't even know if he'd even listen to the show, but I just didn't like what he was doing because, like, the kid came in, he's got a really, really young kid. He came in from lunch, and his clothes were all wet. He didn't zipper his jacket up right, and his dad's like, you know, how are you supposed to be showing up every day? He's like, how do you expect to be a better ski racer, blah, blah, blah. He's like, I'm not the parent, so I can't let him do what he does. I'm just standing there, and it's like, he's just beating this kid up. And the kid's like, yeah, you're right, Dad. I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, it's lunchtime. The kid's young.
Yeah.
Like, just let him go have some lunch.
Yep.
Yeah, he made a mistake. Deal with that later. If it was a problem affecting his racing or his training with us, I think we as coaches will handle it. It's all good, bro. Like, go hang out with the other parents. Go ski with the other parents. Let us do our thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the biggest struggles we've always seen over the years was that you got the sideline parent coaching.
Yep.
Sometimes in the middle of the training day, they come over to go watch their kids in the training course, you know, go down the hill. And then all of a sudden you'll see that one parent shoot off to meet the kid at the finish. And I can tell them that they're riding up on the ski chair with them. And I literally told a parent, I'm like, listen, when they're in training with us, go away. Like, don't be riding up the chair with your son or your daughter in between ski runs coaching them or talking to them because you're not the coach. I'm sorry. Like, we've had to get a stiffer position on this. I don't know what you think about that stuff. But
no, absolutely. I mean, it's so interesting. I always, whenever I go to any sporting event, I always kind of scope out to where the parents sit. And some of my athletes who their parents did have successful athletic careers, Division I athletics, things like that, or they pursued it beyond high school and even beyond college. they always sit away from all the other parents, which is so interesting. Right. They are the ones that are in the upper bleachers and a corner away from everybody else. Because they understand the pressure that not only is the student athlete themselves putting on themselves, but then, you know, you're in a team with other people. You're comparing yourself to other people. There's that whole social dynamic that's there. You don't need it extra from the parents and another coach from the sidelines. They can't hear you anyway.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, one of those things where let them be, you know, have that game, have that performance. I mean, even if they don't do well, there's stuff that they did right. Help them find that. Because ultimately, percentage-wise, you know, the majority of kids playing sports right now, like, that's not going to be their main income draw. That's not, they're not going to get a full scholarship.
The
it's
chance, especially here in northeastern Pennsylvania, the chance of any kid getting on the U.S. ski team, let alone going to the Olympics, is less than 1%. I mean, come on, it's such a rarity. So it's like, let the kids have fun.
Absolutely, it's now seen as this ticket to school where we, you know, I even heard of this one family that they weren't clients of ours, but we have talks like this a lot. You know, we have lunch and learns at our office, which you have been at,
I've attended,
have a lot of really great conversations with just other adults that are involved in the sports world in some capacity. And there was one individual who was talking, they knew a family and their one child, they had two kids, showed promise in baseball.
Yeah.
So that's great. That's super exciting. That's fantastic. They wound up draining their savings, their 401k, everything on this kid, sending him to camp, sending him to tournaments. Mind you, there's still another kid in the family, which we don't know where he is.
I wonder what the psychological damage from that one was.
And then all of a sudden, the kid gets injured.
Yeah.
And so even if he was great, well, now you're looking at a family that's put themselves in a really negative financial position because they were just banking on a college scholarship.
And what's the chance of that becoming a negative relationship between the parents and the child? And it's not the child's fault. It's like, dude, I never told you to wipe out our savings and your 401k to invest in me. I'm like, I'm a kid.
I was 12.
Yeah, like,
what did I know?
What did I know you were doing? Like,
yep.
I mean, and then, like, I think there's a sense of, I don't know, man. I think the fan. That must have been a crazy story. I don't know.
It was. I've never heard a room of adults so quiet afterwards because everybody was just. You just exactly what you were saying. Just that, like, so there's the pin drop, but then there's all of those aftershocks and afterwaves.
And how many
from
other people
decisions.
In the audience have probably spent more than they should have here and there to make those what they call them sacrifices for the child? And it's like, but did the child ask for it? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Do they need? Couldn't they milk another year out of that ski jacket? I mean, do you really need to get them new gear every single year?
Right. Is that one extra camp that happens to be this far away?
Yeah.
Or, you know, and so it's just interesting the culture that America has created over youth sports. I mean, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Sure.
Yet we expect this level of like amateurism.
Yeah.
And so it's just this very weird, very opposite dichotomy where it's
It just cracks me up because, I mean, again, the point of today's show is obviously we're supposed to be talking about goals. But this totally relates to goal setting in a certain way because understand who you are or who you're working with because you as a doctor and me as a coach, we need to adapt to our audience. Mm-hmm. And let's go ahead and bring the parents in because that's who we've been talking about this whole time. It's like understand your child as the audience. And it's like are you doing best by them? Are you helping them set realistic goals and realistic ways to follow through? And are you, and I'm going to use air quotes here, but coaching them in the right way, or in this case, when we're referring to parents, not coaching them to ensure the right way. So I think that's a way we can kind of segue back to goal setting because most people aren't adapting their goals to the people the right way, in my experience.
Yeah, they're
what
not adapting
you?
To the people. They're not, they're just vague. They're just, they're they see these dreams, and it's really a goal is a dream.
Yeah.
But there's no path to it. That's when it becomes a goal.
Well, and you see a lot of these motivational quotes out there saying, you know, long story short, set your goal like so high that it seems unattainable.
Dream big.
But the one advantage of that is, let's say you set that goal, and maybe you only come in at 85% of that goal. That's still 85% better than you were 6 months ago, a year ago. Whatever.
Yep.
But if you had only set the goal at 50% of that, well, then you're going to be at 85% of that 50%. So you're going to be a hell of a lot lower on that goal range. So I want to clarify that because it's, I do back up. It's always good to set really, really high goals.
Mm-hmm.
especially if they're somewhat realistic. But you, sometimes you want to have that crazy off the chart.
Yeah, and it's great to have that outcome goal. Yeah. You know, that this is what I'm striving for. Whether
just don't kill your kid in the process.
Yeah, and whether it's sports specific or all that, but you need to have more than just that one.
Yeah.
Because like you said, if that one goal, and some athletes, and I think individuals, we're all guilty of this, where it's, if I didn't get that exact 100%,
right,
even though I made it 80%, I'm a total failure. I just didn't get that.
Well, and let's relate that back to these youth athletes, because I can tell you, just from my experience, that there's a lot of times we set realistic goals, we set those higher-than-thou goals, I think that's important too,
mm-hmm,
and then we see these goals that are kind of wishy-washy. And then we'll go ahead and relate this back to the parents. The parents think that they're just trying to help the kids support all the goals. But I don't know, I mean, how do you filter through all of this when you're working with your youth athletes? Because you guys work with adults, you work with collegiate, and you work with these younger high school athletes,
mm-hmm,
too. So how do you sort through that conundrum of those different tiers of realistic goals?
Well, there's different types of goals. And so we have those outcome goals, which is the, you know, I want to achieve this time, or I want our team to, you know, get this far in a season, or I want to accomplish this at work. And that's great. Those are typically longer terms. It's typically, you know, takes a month or so. You know, it's longer term. It's not something that's going
to. So are we trying to break down short term versus long term right now?
Okay. So outcome goals are great. The only issue with outcome goals is that you don't have 100% of the control. And so you can show up. And so I work with a lot of swimmers, and it's in swim season right now. And so a lot of my analogies are going to be swimming. And so let's say you set a goal that you want to get based on your level. You want to get an NCAA cut. You want to get a district cut. You want to get a state cut. That's what you want.
What's a cut?
A specific time. So you to swim this event in this certain meet.
You found the one sport that I suck at.
Sorry. Well, so like, you know, so if you want to reach having a chance to swim at this meet, you have to swim this event within, like, by this time.
Okay.
And that's the cut. If you're too slower than that, then guess
so
what?
So this
you're
goes back
to
that term of, oh, I have to make the cut.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. So
right.
I want to make the cut for this meet. I want to get that time. Well, that's a great goal to have, right? And this outcome goal. I want to accomplish this. I want to get first. I want to do this. Well, that's fantastic. You could have the best swim of your life, but the person in the lane next to you happens to be also having a really fantastic day as well.
Right.
And so even though maybe it's like, I wanted to get this time and I wanted to get first and this is where I wanted to place, well, that other person, they just... that
you can't control the other variables.
You can't control what they're doing.
Yeah.
I even had an athlete who there's a mid-season meet that was a really big meet, and so they were resting for a little while, and she works with a couple different coaches, and the one coach she was with didn't rest her for the meet, and so she had no control over
it.
Yep, and so there was, you know, half of her team had been training as hard as she was, the other half over the break kind of slacked off a little bit, but he put everybody in the same training group, so the athlete I worked with didn't have the opportunity to rest, to taper as she should have, and that was totally out of her control. Then she wound up underperforming at a meet, not making that, and then now her confidence is shot, and that's the whole ripple effect out of her control.
This goes back to the value of R&R. We've talked about this in other, I mean, R&R, when people hear that term, sometimes it's more relatable to government, maybe military, like, oh, I've got my R&R days. We used it when I was in fire. R&R is just rest and recovery.
Yep.
And like, why do we need rest? To recover, not just physically, but mentally as well. Being a competitive athlete is mentally draining just as physically draining. You can condition the muscles all you want. We deal with this in CrossFit. People say that people who don't know CrossFit, they feel, oh, well, I always see these people injured, so it seems like a very dangerous way of training in sports. I'm like, no. That is usually a person who didn't listen to their coach, didn't take a proper rest and recovery day or sequence of rest and recovery days, and probably was overtraining. Again, as a coach, I can only control so much. They're the ones paying for their monthly membership, and they're the ones controlling their home life. If they choose to come in 6 days straight in a week and train hard on all 6 days, only allowing one day off, and you do this repetitively, I see concerns with that.
Big
now,
time.
Depending on their programming, right, depending on what they're doing on those days, there can be concerns with that. Let alone the mental recovery. So
yeah, and so we, and even with that, like as a coach, like you can't control. You know, like you have these desired outcomes for the people you coach, but you can't control how much or how little or how over much. Yeah. I guess you know that
you can advise their home life.
Yep.
You can advise here. You can advise there. In the end, it's are you getting through to them? Are they actually following it when they go home?
Yep. And so inherently, there's just a lot of problems with only having outcome based goals, and so that's where we have to. start, especially with like clients that we work with and in coaching and all that stuff, it's making different types of goals. And so the outcome goals, those are the ones that are the most obvious. Those are the, I want to get this point in the season. I want to accomplish this, accomplish that.
And that's more long-term, right?
They're typically more end of the season.
Okay.
It's, I want to accomplish this by this with work. It could be the outcome of a certain project. And so outcome goals are great. However, like I said, you know, you don't necessarily always have 100% of the control. What you do have is control of what you do to get to that outcome goal. And so I kind of like visualizing a staircase where you have on the top of that landing that outcome goal. That's what you're aiming for. And you're right now at the bottom of the
steps. So your steps are like your little chipper goals.
Exactly.
Like the little, or the fuel for the fire, so to speak. You're
exactly.
Just, like each little piece of kindling. I like to envision things in fire. That's my thing. But cool. Yeah, it's like, okay, I want to build a big bonfire, but the bonfire is not going to happen until you build.
Just gonna poof.
Yeah, it's like everybody think back to high school when, if your high school had bonfires. We had bonfires when I was a kid. I don't know. Did you have a bonfire at your high school?
We didn't.
See, right? But
how long did it take
to build that bonfire?
I'm sure it would take a long time.
Right. So their end goal, maybe, and we used to build ours like over 2 days, sometimes 3 days, depending on how big they wanted to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And it came on donations and people dropping off the wood. But it, so it takes time, right?
You have takes time.
You got logistics. You got to drive wood over. You got to drop it off. Then you got to have volunteers to help stack it and build it before you can even get to the point where you can actually fire it up.
Right.
So the point here is like, in order to get a sweet, epic bonfire, it takes time.
Yep.
It takes people. It takes tools. So those are those steps you're talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely. And so within those steps, like there's two different types of steps you can have. You can have your performance goals and then your process goals.
Okay.
And so let's say if we're going to take the – go back to swimming. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, you know, in any event, say, you know, I'm a swimmer and I swim the 200 free. So it's a long race, longer mid – like mild mid-distance race, 8 laps of the pool. And so if I'm – I have this outcome goal of I want to achieve a certain time in my 200 free. What can I do to get there? A performance goal is what do I need to do about that swim? What's a goal that I might have that would help me achieve that? And so maybe 1 week in practice, I'm focusing on I want to go out my first 100 hard.
Okay.
Like that's just my performance in my first 100 I'm really, really, really paying attention to. Then you can actually break it down even smaller.
Okay.
And so it's almost like a puzzle piece.
I like this. Puzzle pieces are cool.
Puzzle pieces. And so for me to attack that 100 free, that first 100 and that 200, what is a technical thing that I can focus on that's going to make me go faster in that first 100, which is what I want to do? And that's that process goal. So that might
be.
So
maybe it's like the stroke rate.
Absolutely.
Or,
it's your stroke rate. It's your tempo. It's your underwaters. It's a fast start. It's
are
a fast
turn. Are you a pretty good
swimmer? I used to swim. Yep. So that's why.
Right. I can learn a few things from
swimmer for a long time. And so it's language that I'm pretty familiar with. And so those are those tiny things that if the moment you get off that block and you're just in your mind, you're like, I'm focusing on my turns. I'm focusing on my turns. Or I'm focusing on my tempo, my tempo. If you're focusing on your tempo and you're focusing on that and doing it well, that performance and that first 100 is going to go pretty well.
Yeah.
So check one goal, check the other goal.
And you've spent, if you've consistently practiced this, you've built the programming between the physical body and the mental. Obviously, you're creating that relationship. So the memorization kicks in and your body starts, it's like muscle memory. We talk
exactly.
about
that. Exactly. And so then after maybe you're at practice and a week of focusing on that, you look back over the week and it's like, okay, great. I'm better at this than I was last week.
Yeah.
And so it's creating those steps.
And this
throughout.
Is when you go back to your coach and you say, hey, this has improved over this week.
Yep.
What is my next puzzle
What's my
piece?
Next
What's
step?
My next step that I need to focus yep. on for those puzzle pieces,
Absolutely.
I guess,
Absolutely.
Right?
And this is really important for a number of reasons because for those outcome goals, you know, we talked about some of their weaknesses, but they're typically, you know, 2-3 months away. You know, we're not trying to PR in anything in your first month of training. And so
how many people try to step into a CrossFit gym and get
stop.
A PR? I'm like, dude, like, let's build a foundation. Hello.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if it's not 2 or 3 months until we're reaching that goal, well, we have no reward between then and now. And so they've done research with rats. I mean, that's psychology is really big on that. And so they put some rats in mazes, and with some of the rats, they had little pellets of treats after certain correct decisions that they made.
Sure.
And so the rats would go through this long maze.
Hey, what is that thing? It's what is the
like the Skinner box?
No, what is the methodology called?
Like behavioral conditioning.
Yeah, yeah. But who's the guy who invented that stuff? Is that Pavlov?
Pavlov.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
And so you're going through the maze, and after a right turn or a correct turn, the mouse will get a little reward, and then all of a sudden you get a release of dopamine in your brain.
Sure.
So now all of a sudden I'm more invested in continuing this. Okay. And then I make another proper turn and I get another reward. And so now I have even more dopamine and I'm even more fueled versus the mice that didn't happen or the rats that didn't happen. Yeah. Some of them got really apathetic. They lose motivation. Some of them sat down. They didn't even finish it. And so in how that translates to humans, if you have this goal, which is maybe it's the best goal you've ever made and you want it, this is the best outcome, that would be amazing. Well, if it's 3 months from now and there's nothing between then and now that's kind of keeping you on track and like, okay, I'm making my way there. Look, right. I just did this week. I'm better this week than I was last week. Well, that's your rewarding yourself. That's your reward system that gets you recentered and remotivated and focused on still continuing your path to that outcome.
This is kind of fun right now because one of our loyal listeners, again, Brian, we talked about earlier, he just sent out a text the other day because there's an old endurance race. He used to be a big mountain biker, and we're getting him back to his like peak mountain biking lifestyle because we all love it. And he wants to go do this crazy endurance race. Like, I think it's lots of hours and lots of miles. And I'm silly enough. I'm like, yeah, I'm in. And so he's trying to get people to sign up. And it's like, okay, that race is going to happen, I think, in like February or March.
Okay.
So it's like, dude, there's not a lot of time to train and condition for that. Mm-hmm. So this is where you have to be really smart with your goal setting and be realistic while also, to go back to what you've been just teaching us here, I think is the important word of patience too. How many people throw patience out the freaking window, whether they're doing a proper program like you're designing where you're building puzzle pieces, then you're getting to the steps, and then you're progressing to that long-term outcome. Or there's other people, it's like, all right, well, I'm going to go do a race in less than 2 months, so screw patience. I'm just going to start crushing it every single day, and that's when we start seeing a lot of mistakes, but also the mental failures. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah.
Like the whole mental failure piece of it. Like, why do people mentally fail when they do that crazy design?
Well, because again, it's putting one pillar. You have that one goal. And so if you have a day that you're not feeling well, you have a day that things aren't happening, you all of a sudden are starting to get discouraged, you start to doubt yourself. I mean, our brain plays a lot of not so polite tricks on us. And
yeah, we've had those days.
You know,
that happened to me this week.
All of us
I was
have
like,
those.
Dude, guess what that day's becoming?
Yep.
A rest and recovery day.
Yeah, and we sometimes have to make a choice of what we want to do. And so if all of a sudden you have this very rigid, I need to do this every day and blah, 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 blah. Well, you're literally just setting yourself up to fail.
Yeah.
And so we have to like have those small goals, those small just pillars that we can see ourselves reaching on the way there.
Yeah.
But then having a plan is super, super important. And so for some of that, like, oh, I have a race in 2 months and so I've never run before, so I'm just going to run every day.
Yeah.
Well, that's not realistic. It may be miserable weather outside and you don't want to go for a run.
Yeah.
You can't control it, but now your training plan is ruined.
Like in his case, like I was telling you earlier before we started the recording, like he just started, he just came onto my nutrition team. So I'm helping him rebuild his Soki, his nutritional foundation. So it's like, granted, I'm sure he's probably setting up his bike at home on the trainer and starting to do some pedal time, which is important. Start conditioning the legs, conditioning the body to handle the bike riding time. That's part of that, those longer steps. But one of the earlier pieces of the puzzle I told him from the beginning is whether he's doing a race or whether we're just trying to fix his lifestyle is how we're fueling the body. We've talked about this on your prior episode, why it's so important to get the right nutrition, the right fuel, because that is the one piece of that whole long-term goal or that lifestyle goal that if we're not fueling our bodies right, all these other things that we're tossing in, new steps, new puzzle pieces, everything else is just going to become crashing down. Like that staircase is going to have the worst foundation ever.
Exactly.
You are not going to pass building code because that staircase is going to collapse.
Yeah. And so having that one outcome, that one thing that we're just so fixated on, like it's not that it's bad to have. You just need to have steps to get there because you're going to have setbacks. There's never really a straight path towards a goal. And that's okay. You know, it's just because I'm not maybe making that gain this week. Well, last week I did.
Well,
and so I'm still there.
You want to win that race, right?
Yep.
But then in the end, you don't win the race. But maybe you come in like 10th and you never did the race before. It's like, okay, maybe you came in 10th, you're pretty disappointed. But let's look back over. Let's say you did all the training in 2 months flat. But it's like, what kind of other wins happened during that time?
Exactly.
Did you drop 5 pounds? Did you increase lean muscle mass by another 2-3%? Have your sleep habits improved?
Mm-hmm.
Have your mental alertness and mental clarity improved? Or just maybe the skill that you're mastering in general, your running skill, your swimming skill, your skiing skill, your biking skill, whatever that skill set was, even though you might have taken 10th instead of winning the race, I guarantee you other things succeeded along the way.
Absolutely.
So maybe the next race you go into, you'll now have that nice solid foundation, that strong staircase built that maybe you didn't get what you got to, but it's like people seem to forget all the other little wins.
Oh, they
along
do.
The way.
I was literally just talking to a client about this over FaceTime before I came here, where you know you have, whether it's a game or a workout or something, and it doesn't the outcome that you were trying to achieve, it just didn't happen for whatever reason. But just because in that, you know, 60 minutes of soccer or that race that you were swimming, just because you didn't necessarily get that outcome, doesn't mean that, like, there were good things in there.
Oh, yeah.
Our brain just actually tricks us, and you could do 7 things right and great and 3 things wrong. Those 3 things are going to be at the forefront of our mind.
So you know what cracks me up? I walked in here yesterday, and I looked on the newspaper. I think it was yesterday or the day before, here at Starbucks in Allentown. And definitely my part-time podcasting office. But there, it was on the front page about how there was a couple bowl games this weekend, football.
Yep.
Right? And it says something about, I think the head coach was proud of his, it was Penn State,
yeah, James Franklin,
right,
yeah.
But it was a huge
crazy
upset.
Game. Oh my gosh, that
first
last
all,
quarter was insane.
I'm a Penn Stater.
Oh,
all right.
Me too. My parents were there.
They've been through a lot.
They have had
so
time.
When I saw that article, I'm just like, first of all, thank God the coach like said something positive. But like the article was just bull, because I'm like, dude, first of all, just the fact they were going to a bowl game blew my mind. I'm like, and I actually came right out and said it. As a loyal Penn State fan, I'm like, dude, they're not ready for a bowl game. I'm sorry. They've been rebuilding the program. The fact that they even got to the bowl blew my mind. So I was like, dude, if I was the coach, I would have been like, just have fun. Like, don't be disappointed. Don't be upset. Just the fact that you guys got to a bowl this soon after literally having to start rebuilding the program over the past 2-3 years. I mean, come on, man. Like, just take the fact that you're there. So I wasn't sure if
and
you had
they had
observations
only
on that.
Like 4 graduating seniors that were starting.
Right.
So I mean,
they have a very young team,
super young, very really
young
promising.
Team.
It was voted the best bowl game this year.
Yeah.
I mean, there's tremendous amount of accolades, you know, to their performance in the game that was there. I mean, it's incredible.
But then
it
was so many
did.
People like, oh my God, when's Penn State? I'm watching them on social media. when's Blue and White going to show
it's
up?
Like, oh, wait a minute, they weren't nationally ranked in the beginning of the season. All of a sudden, they're number 5.
Yeah, I was dude, they already showed up. Like,
yeah, they're there.
I was like, so even as a spectator, right? And this goes back to our earlier point. I'm kind of creating a full circle here about how parents, right, don't think right. So take the social media comments.
Oh.
Let's relate this to what parents think about. It's like, your kid might have started the year with an injury, and now they're making it to a final competition. Like, Penn State started low, and they made it to the bowl game. So even as a spectator, or in this case, a spectator parent, let's celebrate the wins that happened, man.
Yep.
Everybody goes right to the negative, and it drives me nuts. I'm like, it's too easy to go to the negative.
Yeah.
Stop being a pessimist.
Athletic amnesia.
Yeah.
It's
did you
totally
forget
there.
About the journey it took to get here?
Yep.
Let's look at that. And, I mean, especially down going back to full circle here, back to what you guys are trying to help with, which is youth athletes. Because if we can set the ball in motion with these youth athletes or youth movie stars or whatever, the point is, like, there's so many things happening wrong that I just see all the negativity that can happen in the future when they're adults.
Right.
And how many other negative side effects can happen from that poor training, poor coaching, or poor parenting. So it sounds like this is something you guys are heavily impacting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and even the Penn State example, the everything, I mean, in sports, we are so, and in the goals, like, we're so focused on outcome. I mean, even in that game was incredible.
Right.
But all anybody's going to know is that Penn State lost and USC won.
Oh, the big great
it
Penn State lost.
It was an unbelievable game.
Yeah.
And so we pay so much attention to the outcome, so much attention to the record, that we're missing all of the amazing minutes, the amazing plays, the amazing things that are happening right in front of our eyes, because we athletically amnesic sets in, you know, and all of a sudden we just see the score and then that's it and we're angry.
See, this is why I love going back to this valuable point. This is the best practice that I share for mindset. I share it for goals. I share it for coaching, for mentoring, anything, which is, stop getting the newspaper, stop getting a magazine, stop watching the news, get rid of cable. Because they're going to focus on something that's eye-catching first.
Yep.
So most of the time, they draw towards the negative.
Oh, absolutely.
And going back to repetitive psychological conditioning, right? It's like if all you see day in and day out, you wake up in the morning, you walk outside, you grab the newspaper that get delivered, you crack it open, or you take it with you to work. So let's say you open it real quick in the morning and the first thing you see on the front cover is like something got blown up or Penn State lost or whatever. And then you take that newspaper with you to work and now you're reading it maybe on the commute, and it's just full of more negativity.
Yep.
Like, you have to dig deep to find anything positive in a newspaper anymore.
Yeah.
So this is just something I wanted to go really, really high level, because it's so important. Is I swore off cable, swore off newspapers and magazines years ago. Like, first of all, you save money. Big time, actually.
Bonus.
The incremental savings is huge. But again, we're talking about those mental reps and mm-hmm. the conditioning. So I would love to hear your kind of high level influence on that.
Oh my gosh. I think we even touched on this last time. That internal dialogue that we have going through our heads, 200 to 1200 words a minute.
Right.
What sets the tone for that?
Yeah.
It's the things that we see. It's what we expose ourselves to. If you are exposing yourself to really positive messaging and you got this, and really, you know, I mean, on some social media accounts, there are some inspirational ones, or if
yes.
you find a news source that, if you found one, you know it exists, please let us know. You know, that is more positive.
Right.
Well, if that's the messaging that initially you open up a page, you look at something that's going into your head, that sets a tone for a day.
Yeah.
Versus opening and seeing something that's just negative.
When Live the Fuel started, like, there was no podcast, there was no official marketing consulting, there was no coaching yet. Like, when I started it a couple years ago, it was literally an Instagram feed and a Facebook feed. And it was because there's a very popular feed that I follow online called The Bucket List Life. And I started emulating something of what he does. He also does the same nutrition that I mm-hmm. do with Isogenics, but he's he lives in Colorado. So I used to live in Colorado. I just really liked his feed, and he had like 10,000 followers. I'm like, you know what? Why recreate the wheel? Let me look at what he's doing and just start taking some of his best practices.
Yeah.
Clearly, he developed a following because his content is always positive.
Yep.
And I said, let's create some fuel for the fire. And I'm a big motivation and inspiration. I've literally had people contact me saying, I don't understand how you stay so positive, and where do you get all this great content? And I'm like, because I've made a commitment. Dude, I'm still human like you. I still have good days and bad days.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I sometimes feel guilty because maybe, like, I really wanted to flip off that driver who cut me off. But due to the self-work that I've been putting in
yep.
and studying gurus and everything else, it's like, listen, catch yourself.
Oh,
don't
my gosh,
fall
yeah.
down the negative spiral. Like, catch yourself sooner rather than later. And this doesn't happen overnight. This has taken
right.
years for me to get to this point
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. And I think that's sometimes with what goes on in our own heads, we just totally play victim because
yeah.
we don't think that there's anything we can do to change it. But it's a pattern
yeah.
and it's a choice.
You have a choice
and
how
to
react.
It's not an easy pattern yeah. and it's not an easy choice to make. Even the other day I was driving and I just, you know, those days you just wake up and you're cranky
oh, yeah,
for
the
no
whole,
reason.
The whole wrong side
for
of the bed
no,
thing.
Yeah, there has to be yeah. something to it. I mean, there was nothing happened. I was, it just was. And I was,
it was an off day.
I was driving and I literally in my mind, I was like, Megan, you have the opportunity right now to make a choice. It is 10 in the morning. You're either going to have a miserable day or you're going to
oh,
have an
on.
Okay
you're
day.
You're having a bad day at 10. I was going
to,
I thought
morning,
you were going to say 7 or 8. Come on. It's 10. No.
It's after my workout. All right. Let's, some people are not as morning efficient
Wait,
as others.
You were having a bad day after your workout or before your workout?
Yeah, it was just after. I was just in a funk. I had gone to work out. It still didn't like kick it. You know,
really?
I just was angry.
Wow, man. After a workout, usually I'm pumped up.
But
yeah.
Me too.
You were having a bad
but
day.
It was, I was cranky.
You
I just got back
day.
From seeing my friends and vacation. And so it was that like post-vacation lull. And, you know, I was just.
Oh, because
like,
you were just too high on life. Maybe
was,
that's what it was.
I know. I set the bar too high for myself. And the next morning, I was so bummed. But then, I mean, it really, I made a choice. And I'm not saying it was sunshines and rainbows for the rest of the day, you know, but I was like, I'm not going to give in to this.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a choice. I put on some music I really enjoyed. I listened to this one radio show in the morning that makes me laugh. Like, I know things that help fill my emotional energy, that help
right.
fill me, that help put me in a more positive direction. I wasn't about to turn on the news that morning. I wasn't about to go on my Facebook feed to see all of the negativity. I avoided it.
Yeah.
I made a conscious choice of what I exposed myself to, and it was a fork in the road decision. And you have to choose and go down the right path. And it's not easy. And especially, I think a lot of us don't ever take the time to think about what's going on internally. And that's something with my clients I encourage all the time. I even have some of my clients on mood tracker apps. There's like Mood Tracker Daily where it'll like ding your phone and you have to, what am I feeling right now and how intense
you know,
is it?
I like that. I don't use that, but I have the, it was one of the first apps I ever started recommending, but it's called like the 5-Minute Journal.
Ooh.
Or like 5-Min, M-I-N Journal. But it makes you enter in gratitude statements. It
oh,
makes
I love
you answer.
That.
So you have a morning session, an evening session. Admittedly, I slack. I don't always, I suck at it sometimes. But the point is, it's like at least, yeah, the 5-minute journal. There you go. I'm showing it to her right now. But they always give you like a little inspiration quote or an image.
Again, with that positive messaging.
There you go. There's always a daily quote that pops up. Sometimes they recycle them. So I think that's one of their weaknesses. But I literally, when I first started my social media feeds, I would just screenshot this
mm-hmm.
and post that to my feed. to Instagram. I'm like, great. Why recreate the wheel? That was a great message today.
Absolutely.
And I shared that. So it's like, it's not hard to make up your own content. Like sometimes just repurpose your own. But the point is like here, this is one from like November. Like you have to enter in what I'm grateful for. And what's the other one there? What would make today great? So that's your two morning questions.
Cool.
So you want to start with the right mindset.
Exactly. The attitude of gratitude.
And then at the end of the day, like reflect back, man. Like what were the good things that happened that day?
Yep.
So it's stuff like that. It's using technology, like you just mentioned, apps. And again, what was that one called again? It's
Mood Track Daily or Mood Tracker Daily. Yeah, it's a 99 cents. So it's not,
cheap
it's not
going
to break
man.
The bank, but it's really helpful and mindful. And talking about, full circle, that outcome of your day, it's taking that moment at the end of the day to look back. And when you do look back, it's not thinking of all the things that went wrong, because we all have things that go wrong in our day. It's putting more emphasis on the stuff that went well.
Yeah.
And, it could be in as simple as in your workout or at your job that day or just with the people you interacted with. But there's always got to be a good spot, even if it's, you're having a rough time of it. There are good things, and it's being thankful for the opportunities, the people in your life, and really making a point to do that.
Well, and what I really loved, especially for the listening audience here, guys, is like, again, mindoftheathlete.com. That's where Megan, her house is, so to speak. Like, even though these ladies travel all over the place, so they don't really they're not really in the office very often. But mindoftheathlete.com. But I think the most powerful message you actually said today was literally 2 minutes ago, where you said, "Listen, you had a bad day, you were struggling, you had to reset your mindset. You're a freaking PhD. I only minored in psychology, and I've had to like literally figure out my own way to build my own reps. So clearly, you're human. Mm-hmm. You do the same thing. So with our listeners out there, I don't care what country you're from, whether you're poor, middle class, rich, it doesn't matter. We're all still skin and bones, blood, water, everything else made up. Like we're all human beings. We all are affected. Yeah, differently than others, but we all struggle the same ways in different different magnitude, different ways. You had a bad day. I had a bad day. We're all working through it. The difference is, what are you doing to commit to yourself to overcome that and not let it overtake you?
Yep.
I don't know. How would you word that?
Absolutely. There's this great book. It's called Choice Theory. I'm totally blanking the name of the guy. Google it now.
That sounds interesting, because we have a choice.
Exactly. Okay. And so it's, it takes it a little extreme, I think, there definitely are some.
Don't worry to our listeners, because our amazing show notes master, Martin Hollins of EVA.FM, he will be taking note of these things. So
William Glasser is the author? Yes.
Okay.
By Dr. William Glasser. It's called Choice Theory. I had to read it in grad school, but the whole point was, when you're having a day, you're having maybe a time where you are going through a bit of a depressive episode, or there's a lot of anxiety towards something, and, there's obviously certain clinical levels that you do need extra help and stuff like that. So it's not to minimize those situations, but we have a choice. If it's a circumstances, a situation that we think we're totally powerless, reevaluate that.
Yeah.
You're not necessarily completely the victim and completely powerless. There are changes and adjustments that if you little by little, again, that outcome goal might be making that big change, but it's the little steps every day you can take to get there and change your circumstance or situation. And so it's a really fantastic book.
Is it a light read like the new Mind of the Athlete book?
I wouldn't
say
it's as light as the Mind of the Athlete one. It's more than 150 pages, but it's not a textbook.
Okay. All right. So there we go, guys. And eventually, guys, for the livethefuel.com site, all this stuff's going to be on the show notes for her episode, like we do for all of our episodes. We have amazing show notes. But I've actually been considering taking a best practice from a different podcast that I listen to, Vinny Tortorich from the Fitness Confidential podcast, because he's got like a book club. So all of his recommended books, he just literally has a page on his site, and he just hyperlinks all of them in a special like library. And I thought about that. I'm like, if they're all available on Amazon,
right?
Why not do that? So that's one of my goals when I go on vacation next week, to go skiing in Colorado. sorry, I just had to celebrate that. I look forward to my trip every year. But I'm taking my laptop out, and I want to do fun work, like nothing official, just mix it in when I want to. And I think that's something I want to do, because people like yourself, myself, we have all these different tools and best practices. And I love the fact that we just all these nuggets of knowledge, and we're only like 40 episodes or so into the show. And there's probably a whole lot of books that got brought up. So I think I need to go back over the show notes from every episode and find out all these little nuggets of knowledge and maybe create a centralized point.
Yeah.
I think that's a great tool or reference
that
for our listeners.
Because you know what's so encouraging? It's, you know, we sometimes look at the world and the media and we think it's this negative place where... But all of these books exist for a reason. People
right.
are craving positivity. People are craving having this type of message. It's just, where do I go to find it? And
right.
that when that mood hits me and I just need something right now. And
I geek out on it. Like
that's
I literally,
amazing.
My phase one when I hear about a great book is I search for it on Audible first because I'm a digital audio guy.
Yep.
If I can't find it on Audible by Amazon, then I will search Amazon for the physical book.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to do that for Mind of the Athlete, but Dr. Jared hooked me up on my last visit and I got a copy. So that was cool. But that's the point, guys. Like, if you're inspired by something, even if you don't want to buy it right away, like, a big app that I recommend is Evernote. I love the Evernote app because it syncs to your iPads, your computers, your iPhone, whatever. So whatever note I save gets synced across all the platforms. Little tip for you if you don't use it. It's
very
amazing.
Cool.
All the online geeks use it. But the powerful thing is, like, take note of something that means something to you. Like, pull the car over if you're listening to the car and write this stuff down. Or just go back to livethefuel.com later and just copy the notes down off the episode. So we'll do what we can to help you along the way, but just take action, guys. Stop finding reasons to lie in self-misery or accept these negative things that are happening, or don't allow yourself to have a bad day. I mean, we've just admitted, myself and Dr. Megan, that we all have bad days, okay? Guess what? You're human, I'm human, she's
we're
human.
We're all in this together. We're
yeah.
just trying to get through.
And that's why we're doing these episodes, is to help you guys realize that there's transparency here, that we're human. And if you guys hopefully get something beneficial out of this, which that's the whole point of me doing this show, you know, please come back and listen. And also, more importantly, please just give me a review on iTunes, for God's sakes. Like, submit a 5-star. Tell me what you guys think of the show. Tell me what you guys think about Megan, because we're building a sequence here. Like, we're trying to, I've already told Mind of the Athlete that they are more than welcome all the time on the show. We're going to start bringing them back on regularly because they've got a lot of knowledge to share. I want to promote the hell out of their brand, and they're giving you guys just tons of, like, dude, you don't have to go to the PhD doctor in your town, man. You can just listen to her. Like, take advantage of the free stuff when you got it. So, but Megan, I want to bring the show to the close because you got to get over to the swimming team at Emmaus.
Yeah.
So, as always, we're all about the final message. So, because we're goal-oriented today for 2017, what is a message for you to kick off the new year?
Make a goal and make a plan and make a choice every day.
Wow, that was easy. Make a goal, make a plan, make a choice every day. All right, guys. So remember, that book, by the way, she mentioned is in the show notes. So thanks for listening in. Dr. Megan, thank you for coming back on the show.
Thank
this
you
is
for
awesome.
Having me. This is always very fun.
Guys, I love this show. I'm excited for 2017. This is what we're all about. We're here to fuel your health, your business, your lifestyle. Keep living the fired up, epic life. And we'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you for listening to Live the Fuel. Visit us at livethefuel.com. Stay connected on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more at Live the Fuel. Live the fired up, epic life. Hashtag Live the Fuel.